Well, if you're into small sample sizes, this is the show for you. Welcome to Fantasy Baseball Today on Tuesday, April 14th. I feel like Al is not digging this topic today.
No, not at all. I'm going to be a big old grumpy jerk. That's my job, Al.
I'll find it?
Some other role.
Heath, you're in on this topic. You like it?
Well, no, I was saying it's my job to talk softly and be grumpy about everything. Apparently, according to the Twitter feedback,
is that really what they're saying?
That's generally the response. It's either that or why don't you talk more about DFS or why don't you talk less about DFS? One of those.
Can't really seem to find the happy medium there with the DFS / non-DFS listeners. So we moved it to basically the end of the podcast now instead of a half hour. So you'll get all your seasonal fantasy advice and then you'll get some DFS advice and then we'll read some emails. That's typically how it's going to go.
We're going to find out today because we banished the DFS to the end of the podcast, but we've also gotten me on the entire podcast. So we'll find out if those people were complaining really about DFS or if they were just complaining about me interrupting the show.
Somebody said your voice sounds, did you see that one? Your voice sounds like something. It was very funny.
Yes.
What was it?
Shoot. I saw it, but I can't remember who it was. I'm guessing it wasn't nice.
No. It was just... It wasn't nice or not nice.
Oh, it was the guy from Hangover.
Oh, Ed Helms, right?
Yes.
Yeah, you do kind of sound like his character in The Hangover a little bit, and even like the way you speak.
Well, and see, Dave Richard had me as Bill Walton.
Yeah, I hear a little Bill Walton in there.
Oh,
too.
Oh yeah. Then everybody says I sound just like Al. So
and people say that Dave sounds just like me. So by transitivity, we all sound like the guy from The Hangover
and Bill Walton. Yeah.
And Bill Walton.
Well,
it's gone downhill.
No, it's good to know this stuff as we get going here. We're going to look at bullpens. Colorado's got some closer news, obviously, as LaTroy Hawkins is getting a break. We saw the Yankees bullpen in action last night, and it was Andrew Miller getting the save. But we're talking about early season breakouts, and maybe there's two ways to approach this. We can either look at what's happened through the first not even week and a half of the season and see who we might think could be showing signs of a breakout, or we can look at who we thought would be a breakout this year and see how they're doing. Or we can just say this is a silly exercise, but we're going to try it anyway. So email us at fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. We got so much to talk about from yesterday. There were 14 games on the schedule. There were some terrible starts by some reliable starting pitchers. And there's something I want to bring up real quick here that's not necessarily fantasy related, but did you guys see the third inning of the Nationals-Red Sox game where it all fell apart for Jordan Zimmermann?
No, I didn't. I didn't watch any of that game.
I'm really disappointed in this whole development because I didn't take into account, and you would think as a Royals fan I would take this into account, I didn't take into account the Nationals' defense when I got so excited about making Max Scherzer my Cy Young Award winner. And I think that kind of leads into what happened in the third inning yesterday, right?
Well, it does. I mean, obviously, Ian Desmond committed an error before the third inning, but in the third inning there were two high fly balls. One near the monster in left center, one to right center, and Michael Taylor just misjudged the first one and it dropped on the warning track. And then the second one was miscommunication between Harper and Taylor. It looked like Harper wanted to punch Michael Taylor right in the face on the spot. He was so mad. Both of the balls just dropped, and they destroyed Jordan Zimmermann. And he would have had a bad outing anyway, but his outing ended up being so much worse. 8 runs, 7 earned, and 2 1/3. And I just don't understand why we can't use common sense as baseball fans and baseball scorers and score those as errors because they went as hits. Fly ball to the outfield. The outfielder standing under it. He has no idea where it is. He makes a stupid play. It drops, and it's a hit. That's an error to me.
I don't think you're going to get any argument from this side of the podcast.
Well, I didn't see it, but it sounds like it.
And the thing that really is irritating is it's not like this is some archaic rule that they just can't do it. They have a scorekeeper there. They've given him discretion.
Yeah.
And scorekeepers around the league just continue to put their heads in the sand.
Well, and the Twins-Royals yesterday, which we both watched, I had the same thought about Phil Hughes, who didn't pitch yesterday. It was Trevor May, but I had Hughes as a sleeper candidate this year, and I'm not saying I'm completely coming off of that, but just watching the Twins and their lack of fundamentals yesterday, it's like, oh, no wonder why Hughes had this high BABIP last year.
Well, and It's easy to account. I think Adam brings up a good point. It's easy to account for unearned runs. And a lot of times those don't even hurt you except if they cost you a win for your pitcher.
Mm-hmm.
But I think what maybe we haven't done a good job of is recognizing which teams are so bad defensively that they give up a lot of earned runs that
lack of range
maybe right. should be unearned, but they aren't.
Well, I can say that Ian Desmond is really, really hurting Nationals pitchers. I mean, look, even if it's an unearned run, it still extends an inning, puts a lot of pressure on pitchers, and it's just bad. And he's got, I think, 5 errors already. I'm going to look it up now. I think he had 7 errors in April last year.
And, it was a lot.
And then he kind of, you know, got better.
Scherzer's just got to be thinking, you got to be kidding me, because, you know, all those years with the Tigers and the brutal infield defense, and then they get Iglesias, and then he misses the season, and then he moves on.
And
same stuff, different day.
He's been outstanding.
Yeah.
He's been outstanding, and he's 0-0.
Well, let's get into the show a little bit here after that scorekeeping/defense rant. Email of the day is from Kyle in San Diego. Who's the better early season stud to pick up in hopes of a breakout in a 10-team points league, Pedro Alvarez or Mike Moustakas?
I pick Alvarez.
I don't want to pick Moustakas because everybody's just going to call me a homer, but I'm not that excited about Alvarez this year either.
Why not? Because I had him as a preseason breakout.
Well, then I think we should go with Pedro Alvarez.
But can we really call him
we'll
a breakout?
Take my word for it.
Alvarez has 230 homer seasons.
What's that?
Alvarez has 230 homer seasons under his belt. So
right,
more
he doesn't
bounce
really
back.
Seem, I guess, so much like a breakout to me.
Well, but last year he struck out less, so I'm thinking if he carries that over and then rediscovers that 30 home run power,
right?
That is a breakout if it happens.
It would be, yeah. Well, as good as Mike Moustakas has been, Pedro Alvarez is batting over 300 with 3 home runs already. But I think, guys, that this is a time where you can look at some early season performers and think, I have to add this guy. He might have a big year. So who are some early season breakouts, you know, that you think maybe could reach a new level this year?
All right, I'm going to play this game and not be a total curmudgeon because I do have one name. And probably if I think really hard, I could come up with a couple more. But Joe Kelly is somebody who I certainly did not consider a breakout candidate before the season. But if he does what he did in his first start on something of a regular basis, then, yeah, Mr. Kelly is a breakout candidate this year. He was a very different type of pitcher and one who really fits more of the mold of the hard thrower that he actually is.
Did you read that Fangraphs article?
Not yet. I saw it, but I did not read it yet.
Yeah, someone tweeted that at me, and I don't know. Basically, it was just about his pitch speed. But yeah, I mean, he throws hard enough to be better than he had. Actually, Al, Joe Kelly a couple years ago had a pretty good year.
Well, he did, but I kind of dismissed it, or I didn't kind of. I dismissed it as a fluke. I think there was a very high strand rate that season. There mm-hmm. were things that just weren't matching up with the strikeout rate and the walk rate. And that strikeout-to-walk ratio for him has never really been very good. The skill he's relied on is the ground balls, and that's the thing that was actually absent in his season debut.
All right, Heath, who you got?
Let's talk about Anthony Gose.
Okay.
He's hitting .391. He's got 9 hits, 4 of them for extra bases. And I don't think it's a problem at all that his BABIP is .615.
All right, do you think Gose could have a breakout? This is the best situation he's been in. Batting leadoff, even if he's going to sit against lefties, batting leadoff in that lineup?
Yes, I mean, I think he's going to have... somewhat of a breakout. He's not going to be anywhere close to as good as he's been so far, but he could be a useful player for sure. He is in a good position. The Tigers are going to score plenty of runs. He's got the speed and is at the top of that lineup. As long as he can hit enough to stay at the top of that lineup, I like him to be useful.
Are there any players out there that you've been like, oh, well, this is a really good start. I'm encouraged. This could be the start of something big.
I've done that with Adam Lind. That's due partly on what happened last year with him, but you know, he didn't play a whole lot last year. So yeah, I'm encouraged by the good start by Lind.
One guy, and I guess I'm probably going to kind of steal this guy from Al because I think that he likes him, but he had a very good first start, and that's Nick Martinez.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And he had a good finish to last year too. So he could be continuing something. I think people kind of just roll their eyes and act like, well, we know what he is, but he's only thrown 147 innings in the major leagues.
Well, if you guys were going to gamble on a breakout, would it be Kelly or Nick Martinez?
I would go Martinez.
Oh boy. I think I would go Kelly because I think Martinez's appeal is still more limited to his venues. I don't really like him at home. He's sort of like Chris Young. I guess we were talking about him off air, Chris Young. But I loved it when Seattle signed him and put him in the rotation. I think fully Nick Martinez could be a Mariner.
Who's more likely to break out? Nick Martinez, Joe Kelly, Zach McAllister. Let's throw him in there.
I'm not a big McAllister guy, so I'll stick with Martinez.
And I'll go with McAllister. I haven't been a big McAllister guy in the past. I still think that that increased velocity could translate into something good. By the way, I just looked up Kelly's stat page. His velocity's up. It was high before.
Yeah.
And it's up.
Yeah. He's a hard thrower. I mean, he's 95, I think probably a little 96 in there. Okay, listen, if there's one guy who so far has broken out, it's Jake Odorizzi. Now, Heath, you didn't trust Jake Odorizzi last night. Al, after his first awesome start in his first start of the season, you said, I want to see him do that on the road. Well, last night, only 3 walks, 3 strikeouts, but 8 innings, 2 hits, 1 earned at Toronto. That's coming off a scoreless start in 6 2/3 against Baltimore, where he struck out 7. Jake Odorizzi, could he be this year's big breakout pitcher?
I think he could. And this was something actually that, you know, last year I thought maybe was going to come down the pike this year, because there was, like I said, I want to see him be able to do this away from Tropicana Field with some regularity. But that's kind of the last hurdle for him, because he became a better control pitcher, a good strikeout pitcher. And, so I think that possibility is there for him.
I got one beef with Rays pitchers, and I don't know why this didn't occur to me beforehand. They are just going to face some brutal lineups.
Yeah.
You know, and he's already done it against Baltimore and Toronto, two of the better lineups in baseball. Then you got Boston in there. You know, the Yankees are probably going to be like average, but they don't get to face the Rays.
Here's the weird thing about this start against Toronto for Odorizzi, though, because the thing that scares me about him is the high fly ball rate, and he did allow 10 fly balls last night, which is kind of a lot, but he got 13 grounders.
Mm.
He got 4 grounders in the start against Baltimore. So I just have a feeling that this isn't going to be the sort of thing he's going to be able to do every time.
Too many
fly
balls.
No, I don't think it is.
I mean, the Blue Jays of all teams, you would think, I mean, they're usually pretty fly ball happy.
Right. And I think there's a lot of room between what Odorizzi was last year and what he's been for the first 2 starts this year. So yeah. He can be a breakout and still regress a little from what he's been in his first 2 starts. But they're definitely encouraging.
All right, here are some guys that maybe we pegged as breakout candidates. Maybe we didn't. But Nolan Arenado, off to a very good start. 2 home runs, one of them on the road. He's batting .333. We're encouraged. Yes.
Oh, right. Yeah. I had him as, I thought he was the top third baseman, so I'll take it.
Oh, all right. How about every Kansas City hitter? Heath, if there's one who you think's going to break out this year, give me a Royal.
I guess maybe where I got lost in this conversation was with the term breakout. And I think it's why because when I think breakout, I start thinking players that necessarily haven't done it before.
Yeah, reaching new heights.
And I guess the guy that I'm most encouraged about so far has done it before, and that's Kendrys Morales. But he was, like, irrelevant last year.
Yeah, he's more bounce back than breakout, but your point is taken.
So he's the guy I'm most excited about. The other guys are all, I mean, Salvador Perez, maybe the best hitting catcher in baseball for the first 2 or 3 months of the season, and then he's going to break down because Ned Yost refuses to rest him.
Is that a serious concern for you? Do you think at some point?
Oh, he was awful last year in the last month and a half of the season. He was pretty awful in the playoffs, and I'm not saying necessarily statistically, just watching him, he looked so tired, and he wants to play every day, and Ned Yost loves that he wants to play every day. And poor Eric Kratz cannot get out of the dugout.
Well, no, it's very fantasy relevant because I think if you're a Salvador Perez owner, at some point, if he hasn't sat yet, and at some point,
yeah, I don't know if he will.
At some point, if you want to sell high on him, if he still was barely sitting, I think that's something to keep in mind. I thought Billy Hamilton could have a breakout season, and even though he's only hitting 250, he's still ranking very, very well at the outfield position in both points and roto. He's 7-for-7 in steals. I know, Al, you like Marcus Semien a lot. You like what you're seeing from him. He's batting 323, not a lot of extra base hits or anything, but 323 so far with 7 RBI.
Yeah, I like it. I expected more of a decent average from him with better power, but you start off this whole conversation by saying, who likes small sample sizes? So I think the average will come down, the ISO will go up, and I think he's going to be pretty good.
I just wish they'd move him up in the lineup.
Yeah.
I don't know why he has to hit 8th or 9th.
Well, I think everybody on that team is hitting, so why rock the boat, right?
Well, the thing is, it's Bob Melvin, so you don't like the lineup today. It's not like Michigan weather, wait 5 minutes, it'll change.
Yeah, okay.
When Mark Canna stops hitting, what do you guys think of Mark Canna, by the way?
Yeah, I sort of agree with that assumption that when he stops hitting. I think he's a Rule 5 guy. I think he'll earn his roster spot all season long. It's not like they're going to send him back to the Marlins. But I do see him as more of a platoony type player.
Finally, two Red Sox on this potential breakout list here. Mookie Betts. Mookie Betts has had two good games. Both of them have been really, really good. Yesterday he homered. He took a home run away from Bryce Harper, although I say he did not have to jump to get to that ball. But he's only batting 233 with two home runs, and he got his first two steals of the season. I think, did you guys see it? I think he stole second, then nobody was covering third or something. He got up and stole third.
That's what I was just going to ask, is if he stole two bases on the same play. That's what I'd heard, but yeah. I hadn't actually seen it.
I think that's what happened. But
that's pretty good.
Anything to say about Betts or Xander Bogaerts, who's batting 433 right now with one double, one triple, so two extra base hits for Bogaerts.
I'm excited and encouraged about both these guys.
Me too. And the thing that keeps sticking in my mind about Betts is this article that I read, I want to say in February, maybe in March, where the Red Sox were doing some neuro scouting, they're calling it, where they test their minor leaguers and they have them play these things that are sort of like video games, but it's to test hand-eye coordination. And they're saying Mookie Betts is just completely off the charts within their system.
I think that's the thing that the Rays were doing last year, and I hope I don't have this story wrong, but I think the Rays were like the first team to try that last year.
Uh-huh.
And that was the thing where Will Myers was talking about how he wasn't going to do something like that because he would just hit the ball.
Ah, he'll never be a Red Sox.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's why he's no longer a Ray.
But, anyhow, so, I thought that was kind of an interesting, thing about Betts. And, clearly, very athletic, skilled guy.
Mm-hmm.
And skilled in ways that, I think, we don't typically think about with ball players.
Hey, CBS Sports hosts one-day fantasy baseball leagues on FanDuel. And sign up right now. I've been playing FanDuel. It's a lot of fun. All of us have been playing FanDuel. We'll give you some advice later on in the show. Every dollar you deposit, FanDuel is going to match it with up to $200 that gets earned as you play, a bonus of up to $200. Sign up right now at FanDuel.com and use the offer code CBS. That's the offer code CBS. And look, you got to pick one pitcher, three outfielders, as Heath would say, National League lineup. Matt Harvey's probably going to be in a lot of lineups today. He's the most expensive player. And we'll talk about that in a little bit. Big news! Colorado going bullpen by committee, giving the Troy Hawkins a break for now. What do you guys make of this? It's Rafael Betancourt, who had 31 saves a few seasons ago, got the save yesterday, pitched a perfect inning with two strikeouts.
I mean, he could. I've overlooked him. I've been touting Ottavino. I do like Ottavino better, but I'm not sure that he's so much better. I think with Betancourt, it's just with the year off, I've just sort of assumed some regression and that he's not going to be the guy that he was. But, if he is, then, he could keep that closer job.
I'm not really excited about whoever wins this job, but I think that maybe the Troy Hawkins break should are they easing towards retirement? You know how old he is?
Hawkins,
62?
Right?
Adam was closer.
Oh.
How old is he?
He's 42.
What did Al say?
Al said 42.
Oh, I said...
He said 62. It was funnier, so...
Yeah, thank you. So I win. I was the closest without being right on the money.
Yes.
All right, Joel Peralta for the Dodgers pitched in a... Not a save situation, but a closer situation. Tie game in the ninth inning at home. And then the Dodgers would go on to win in extra innings.
I'm really mad at you right now.
Why?
Because it's not Joel, and I wanted to call him Joel.
It's Joel Peralta?
Al corrected us all and said
I wasn't correcting. I was...
Well, you're right.
I am, okay. Well, I was,
according to Baseball Reference,
I'm like the blind squirrel, you know, who...
And I, Al has this thing during our video segments where he kind of challenges everyone to try to keep up with his pun game. And you can't keep up with Al's pun game. But anyway, I wanted to start my... Joel Peralta segment with, after he got his first save, with the first Joel, but like the first Noel. But
I don't get what does that mean.
The first Joel,
the first Noel. What is?
Oh,
that?
This is embarrassing.
What is?
I mean,
it?
I know it's a Christmas carol, but
yeah, it's the old Christmas carol.
Oh, well, okay. Well, I figured it was Christmas related. Not my.
Not your wheelhouse?
Not my wheelhouse.
Well, I just Christmas exhausted thing. My first Noel knowledge here on the podcast. So,
well, good job. Very, very good pun. All right, well, would you rather have Peralta or Betancourt?
Oh, this is too bad. This isn't a video podcast. Heath just made an awful, sickening expression there.
Look, you got to get somebody.
I hope I don't. I hope that I put myself in a better position than not making that decision.
I'm with you there, Heath, but I'm all about playing the games as the rules are defined today. So I'm going to go Betancourt just because I think he's got a better shot job security.
I will go with Betancourt, and I will feel confident in it.
And I'll say, by the way, I don't really think he has great job security, but that's more a statement for me about Peralta.
So how about Andrew Miller? Do you think he's the Yankees closer right now?
Yeah, I do.
Yes, for sure.
Do you think he'll be the Yankees closer all season?
I think I would like Andrew Miller a lot more than the two guys we've discussed so far.
And, yeah, I actually do. I figured whoever would get that opportunity first is good enough to not blow it.
Man, that's crazy. And Betances, look, he's not getting hit around. He's only given up three hits and three and a third. And he's not getting hit hard or anything, and he hasn't even given up an earned run, just one unearned. But six walks for Betances in three and a third innings. And he just, this is not my opinion. This has been written. He's just mechanically not right at the moment.
He's provided a great example for why you should not use ERA to judge relievers.
Oh, well, you could have used any stat to judge him. His whip was great. His strikeout rate was great. His stuff is great.
So far for this year. Because his ERA is not as bad as he's been.
For this year. Yeah, yeah. No, yeah, you're 100% right. I mean, whip is obviously a big one for him this year. And Miller's a great pitcher. So he can, I mean, if Miller's the guy, he could be an elite closer, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
And he's 67% owned. But I got to say, I am not 100% convinced that this is permanent. I feel like if Betances gets right, he could be the closer again.
So you think that that's just the Girardi and the front office, that's they're kind of waiting for that?
I think they have no choice right now. You can't have Betances pitching right now the way he's pitching. You can't have him as the closer.
No, I understand that, but if Miller gives them no reason to be removed.
Yeah.
That was all the indication during spring training was that the Yankees organization were sort of rooting for Betances.
I don't have a great reason because I'll tell you why. Betances, I think, is more suited to pitch more than an inning, even though Miller did it last night. But Betances would be better in a 7th, 8th inning role, and the Yankees do have other lefties in their bullpen, especially when they call Chase and Shreve back up after another week or so. So that means you don't necessarily need Miller's left-handedness. There are plenty of reasons for Miller to keep that job. Look, put it this way. I'm all about picking up Miller. I don't drop Betances. That'd be my advice. Do you agree or disagree?
You'd rather have Betances than Wade Davis?
Yes, because I still just want to see this sort out for a couple more weeks maybe before I'm convinced that Betances is no longer an option to be the closer.
I'm not looking to drop Betances. Well, first of all, I don't own him, so this is hypothetical for me, but I wouldn't be looking to drop him. But it's at the point now where if there was somebody I was really dying to pick up,
right,
I'm comfortable with that now to make that swap.
More news. Michael Brantley may not play until Friday. Bob Melvin says Sean Doolittle may be back in May, perhaps toward the end of May. Henderson Alvarez is on the DL with shoulder and elbow inflammation. If David Phelps is replacing him, do you have any interest in Phelps?
I don't, and it sounds like he is definitely replacing him.
All right. Raisel Iglesias was sent to the minors. This whole speech yesterday that I didn't want to drop him, and I dropped him for Chris Heston.
Hang on. I mean, how long is it going to be before Jason Marquis blows up? Right?
Yeah. Yeah. Is that your approach?
Yes.
Okay. Devin Masaraco is going to have an MRI on his hip. And Garrett Richards, could he pitch on Sunday?
You'd have to ask him.
But I mean,
he'll have sufficient rest to do it.
I think it'd be nice if he waited until Monday, because we can't activate him from the DL and get him on my roster. So if I could get him Monday for a two start next week, that'd be really nice.
Yeah, that would be a lot better. All right, let's talk about some struggling studs, guys. Adam Wainwright, 7 innings, 5 runs, 3 earned, 8 hits, 1 walk, 4 strikeouts against Milwaukee. We kind of talked about how his first start at the Cubs wasn't as good as the box score. Jordan Zimmerman was horrible. Anibal Sanchez struck out 9, didn't walk anybody, but gave up 3 homers and 5 runs at Pittsburgh. John Lester's had 2 duds now, 10 hits, 6 runs against the Reds yesterday. And that's it. Wainwright, Zimmerman, Anibal Sanchez, John Lester. Any level of concern for those four guys?
Yes. Yeah, well, Lester for me. Wainwright, I some concern, but really no more than I had going into the season. Zimmerman, I just write that off. Well, Zimmerman and Sanchez, I'm pretty much just writing off those starts. But Lester, and I didn't watch this game, but I saw in the box score he had an error on a pickoff attempt.
Yeah, and then Jorge, I think he had an error, and then Jorge Soler threw someone out going to third or something like that. But Lester gave up 3 runs in the first inning. Let me look it up. And then I think he settled in and was really good until the 6th inning.
And then he gave up 3 more, I think.
I don't know if he gave them up or if they were they were charged to him. I can find that. But you guys go ahead and talk why you're worried about him.
But, and I didn't see this game, so this might be very knee-jerk on my part, but it's just Lester didn't look good, didn't look comfortable on opening night. And so the fact that he's followed that start up with one where he's produced an ugly line score, that gives me cause to worry. But, yeah, obviously I should investigate it a little bit before I do anything about it.
I am a little bit concerned about Lester. I'm not really so much. I agree with Al. I'm not so much concerned about Sanchez. He's got an 18% of his fly balls are turning into home runs right now. I don't think that's probably going to last. It's probably going to drop considerably, considering last year it was 3%. And the year before that it was 6%.
I'm sorry, I'm just trying to look up this Lester stuff. But okay.
So you want me to just keep filling?
No, that's fine. I'll come back to it in a little bit.
Jordan Zimmerman, yeah, I don't know if I can overlook that quite as much, because the main problem was how bad his defense was, and I don't know why we think his defense is going to get a lot better.
Well, by the way,
I know that's a good chunk of the season that's going to pass, but...
Look, those plays, it's not like they were tough plays that... Or like medium plays that that like a normal outfielder would make.
Right.
Those 2 fly balls that dropped were pathetic. I mean, I've never seen 2 in an inning like that. I don't think. I can't recall seeing that. So I can't imagine that's going to happen again.
Ever.
Seriously. This season, we may not have 2 fly balls drop in the same inning where an outfielder's just kind of staring at it like, what's happening here? Well, by the way, John Lester did not give up any runs in the 2nd through the 5th inning, and that is all that I have for you there.
Well, I made a joke, and you were talking underneath it, so we didn't hear what you said, and you didn't hear my joke. And so it was a bad moment in podcast history.
What was your joke?
Was it a
Christmas joke?
Plate, bro.
I'm going to stop talking over you. What was your joke?
For the 3rd time, and it's lost its luster completely now. I said it was a clown play, bro.
Oh, that wasn't even that funny of a joke.
It was the 1st time.
I could see that being funny the 1st time. Hey, let's talk about the standouts for Monday. As I mentioned, John Lester gave up 3 in the 1st and 3 in the 6th. Scott Kazmir was awesome. You guys have anything to say about Kazmir? Do you think he could be a sell-high candidate later in the year based on what we saw last year?
I don't like to play that game too much. I mean, well, you know, in the case of Salvador Perez, where you're talking about a catcher who's, you know, going to catch 150 games, that's one thing. But with a pitcher who's really in the third year of this incarnation of himself, I there's really not enough trend there. But
he wore down and wasn't very good in the second half last year.
Yeah,
terrible.
He wasn't, but who's to say, you know, he didn't condition differently this offseason? Who's to say that was completely fatigue-driven? I just don't really like to play that game.
I think it really depends. My problem with saying I'm going to sell high on Scott Kazmir is, and I could be wrong, but I don't think you're going to get anyone that's going to buy him thinking he's an ace, and that's what he's performing like right now. I think he has a long enough track record that people are still going, they may buy him like what he's been over the last 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not enough of a reason to sell high. The only reason way I'd sell high is if somebody's going to, I mean, if he performs like this for another month and somebody says, I'm on board and wants to pay up for an ace, then yeah, that's selling high.
Matt Latos, drop or hold?
Oh, he's droppable.
I said that I wanted to give him one more start. He wasn't, that was a tough situation last night, but he's faced the Braves twice. And he's got a terrible, terrible ERA, and I think, yeah, let him go.
Came down a lot.
It did drop. He was. I mean, if you were going to base it on ERA, I guess he was the most improved player of this week.
Johnny Peralta, 75% owned, and right now hitting pretty well, 360 with a home run. I don't know really what to say about Peralta. Maybe a little underappreciated. He was number 7 at the shortstop position in points last year. Number 10 in Roto. So I know people are taking flyers on guys like Jose Iglesias and Brad Miller. But do you think Peralta, I know he's 75% owned, but do you think he's a guy that probably should be close to 100% owned?
I think the problem is there's 25% of the people out there that go to search for him and they spell his first name wrong. And they just don't find him, and so they think he's already owned.
That could be it. Got that weird H in there.
I think he's slightly under-owned. I don't think he should be 90%+ owned, because he's sort of on the fringe where a guy like Brad Miller, even though, you know, Peralta, we pretty much know who he is, although the power does seem to vary a lot. I think he's like every third year he has a power surge. But, you know, we pretty much know who he is. And even with that, you could project a guy like Miller, if he breaks out, he's probably going to be better. So... I just don't think Peralta needs to be universally owned.
Who would you guys rather own? Two guys who pitched well yesterday, Aaron Harang or Chris Heston?
Chris Heston.
Chris Heston.
How are we feeling?
37% ownership.
Yeah, how are we feeling about Chris Heston?
I'm feeling great. This is somebody I completely dismissed after his first start until I realized he was throwing harder.
Yeah, I'm not sure if I feel great, but I would rather have him than Aaron Harang.
Oh, Al.
Here we go.
Way to not start him against me yesterday in the podcast league.
Oh, Heston?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, I was a little concerned about going with a two-start guy. And the thing is, I apologize because I have, you know, a lot of leagues. It's hard to keep things straight. But I'd start Feldman in that league, right?
I think so, yeah. No, yeah, look, I don't blame
bad.
You.
I was just
talking smack,
that didn't
dude.
Work out.
But seriously, Heston, does he have an opportunity here? This guy was 0% owned last week, now 37% owned. Two-star pitcher, you kind of understand why. But does he have an opportunity here to stick around in the rotation for the Giants and be a 60 to 80% owned guy in a few weeks?
I think that's a little bit strong. I think he's a guy that you're probably going to see his ownership percentage change greatly, depending on who he's facing, where he's pitching, and if he has two starts. So he might be a 60% owned guy in a month if he has a two-start week, and one's at home and one's in San Diego.
Okay. So not a must-add by any means.
No, I mean, you know, I liked him. I did, by the way, pick him up in the podcast league. I just didn't start him.
Yeah.
He is RP eligible, so in that format, he's got a lot of allure. And I don't know, I really, just really like what I've seen from him so far. I do agree, though, with the gist of what Heath is saying, that he's not a must-add or must-start just yet.
Any thoughts on Trevor May?
You know, he's better than this. he was very good for 5 innings.
Yeah.
And
didn't he pitch five innings?
Five plus.
Five in the third.
He didn't get an out in the sixth.
He didn't? I thought he got one. In any event, he pitched in the sixth. Did not pitch well in the sixth inning. Up until that point, not a great line, but it was a lot of that was on the Twins' defense and on bad luck. But what happened in the sixth inning, unfortunately, that was a lot of Trevor May. And that's the thing is when he's really solved the control problem. So that's good. But sometimes he does need to work on the command within the strike zone, and I think that's what caught up with him in the sixth inning.
Well, and it's hard to say against the Royals. You have a high chance of being unlucky against them because there's so many balls in play.
Yeah.
And you have a good chance of looking like your control's a lot better because they're pretty hard to walk too.
But, I mean, this isn't just the one start. I mean, between his first start, spring training, and the last five or six starts from last season, it was like a dramatic day-night difference for him.
So we should look at his day-night splits, basically?
That's not really what I'm saying.
By the way, Al Melchior gets the Trevor May box score trivia question of the day correct. 5 1/3 for Trevor May. I do apologize for my mistake. Any other standouts, you guys?
Well, when you write a 4,000-piece long-form piece on a guy, you know, you pick up on these details.
Okay. So I guess I should do that next time he starts. Anybody else you guys want to talk about from yesterday? Any other standouts?
Yeah, so that's a ringing, it's very loud silence there.
Okay, then here we go. Injuries, news, and notes. Koji Uehara is back. Jason Wirth is back. Matt Dendecker option to AAA. Francisco Liriano is going to start on Wednesday. Alex Rios was hit by a pitch on his hand. We'll keep you updated on that. Ryan Rua could be out a while with his ankle sprain. Billy Hamilton day-to-day with a sore finger. Hanley Ramirez fouled the ball off his foot. X-rays were negative, and Hanley is expected to play today. Asher Wojciechowski pitched last night in relief of Scott Feldman. He was scheduled to start today, and now it is Brad Peacock, right?
It is Brad Peacock, yes.
Oh, stack them. Stack the A's.
We will discuss Brad Peacock later in the show.
Don't start Victor Martinez. You should check the lineup anyway, because he didn't start yesterday in the NL Park. And I would imagine he won't start today, but, you know, I don't know that for sure. ESPN Chicago reports that Robin Ventura could use Jose Abreu at third base in interleague play. I'd be surprised if that happened five times.
Yeah.
But
I think that would be fun to watch.
Yeah, it would. Then I'd have to watch and listen to White Sox broadcast, which would be bad for me.
Mute.
They drive me crazy.
Steven, I like to imitate them, especially when bad things happen to the White Sox.
We should start a Twitter account when bad things happen to the White Sox and just speak like Hawk Harrelson.
You can put it on the board.
Yeah, exactly. I kind of want to start a Twitter account. Guy watching on DVR, and you just react to things like 20 minutes after they happen. Like really obvious things. I think there's some room. I think there's some potential there. Thoughts?
I like the ghost. You know, the Demi Moore doing pottery with the ghost thing. I like that better.
Sorry, joke fail. Steven Vogt day to day with an ankle injury. Brett Gardner day to day hit by pitch on the wrist. X-rays were negative. Oh, Alex Guerrero played a little third base yesterday. Had two RBI and the game winning hit. Yeah, who's excited?
Not us, apparently.
No.
Why not?
I should be. I mean, great minor league numbers last year and finally a potential opportunity to play. And I think Scott said this on the podcast yesterday that you know, he just senses that they're not really eager to give Guerrero that time.
Now, Justin Turner was available. The game recap said that Juan Uribe was out. Vin Scully, I thought I heard him say that Juan Uribe was available. So I'd be interested to see how long they stick with Guerrero. Cole Calhoun missed his second straight game with a calf injury, and apparently the new turf in Toronto is very, very slow.
Longer filaments, they say.
I wonder if that's bad news for Jose Reyes.
It seems like it couldn't be good news for Jose Reyes.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. Keep it in the back of your mind. Seattle Sluggers. The Mariners hit four solo home runs last night. Nelson Cruz had two of them. Kyle Seager had one of them. He's batting 185. Dustin Ackley had one. Ackley is 32% owned. Maybe he should have been in our little breakout segment. He's batting 353 with three ding-dongs.
Little one more fun stat about the Seattle offense. They have a league-worst 202 BABIP so far this year. 202.
That's bad.
Now, they generally seem to rank very low, because I remember having this conversation, I think, like a couple years ago.
Right.
And I don't know if it's something about Safeco, maybe. But it's odd.
I don't know what it was last year, but it's got to be 50 points lower than anything it could be, right?
Sure. Well,
I mean,
probably,
it's not going to be below 250.
I mean, you know, even teams that are sort of chronically low, you know, aren't going to usually be below 280 even. So
right,
yeah.
Would you guys
probably is changing a little with the shifts? I'd say we'll see a.
It didn't last year. I mean, logic would say it would.
Right.
Yeah.
Would you rather have Dustin Ackley or Will Myers?
I'd rather have Will Myers.
There's more upside there.
Yeah.
Ackley or...
I'm really hesitating on that because I did peg Ackley as a breakout this year, and especially given the way he started and the way he finished last year, I'm feeling really confident about that.
Yeah, he might be on your own. Ackley or Desmond Jennings?
I'll go Ackley.
Yes.
Ackley or Marlon Byrd?
Ackley again.
Ackley.
All right, three up, three down. Three up number one is Mark Canna. We talked about him. Three up number three is Pedro Alvarez. We talked about him. So right there in the middle is Jorge Soler. Three up number two. Two home runs yesterday. Batting 304 now with his first two home runs of the year. One walk, six strikeouts for Soler. Would you guys like to say anything about Cubs outfielder Jorge Soler? You don't have to.
He's really good, and I always pick the wrong days to start him in DFS and the wrong days to sit him.
Three down, Chris Davis, 0-for-4 with four strikeouts against the Yankees. No walk, 6 Ks this year, one home run for Chris Davis with a C. Chase Utley is 2-for-22 without an extra base hit. And Russell Martin is 1-for-19. He's been replaced by Dalton Pompey, second in the Blue Jays order. Now he's batting 6th or 7th. Are you guys particularly discouraged by any of these three guys, Chris Davis, Chase Utley, or Russell Martin?
I'm really not discouraged by Chris Davis. I expect him to be a little bit streaky. The fact that he had 4 Ks yesterday and he only has 6 for the year is maybe encouraging. So, I'm not too worried about Chris Davis at all. Russell Martin was somebody that I really thought I played him last night in DFS, and that was a disappointment, but it's going to be hard not to play him again today.
Martin or Steven Vogt?
I'm going to go formats here. Vogt, Roto, Martin, and points.
Okay.
I can't disagree with that.
Utley or Rougned Odor?
Stinky.
Yeah.
Utley or Jerko?
Utley.
I like Jerko more than most, so I'm going to go with Jerko.
Let's look at our rotation. I'll just pick a few guys here. Let's talk about that that Dodgers-Mariners matchup. James Paxton and Brandon McCarthy both struggled in different ways. McCarthy gave up 4 home runs, but he struck out 10, didn't walk anyone. And Paxton, I was very disappointed in. 6 hits, 5 runs in 6 1/3. Would you guys want to hold on to Paxton and McCarthy or what? They're both owned in over 80% of leagues.
This is really weird from Brandon McCarthy. Is this 2 starts in a row now? He's given up 11 runs. No, I'm sorry, 9 runs and struck out 19 in 2 starts
with 1 walk.
That's so strange.
I mean, 6 homers. I'll put it this way: if I don't think anyone's going to drop Paxton because his first start was good, but if anyone drops McCarthy, I would certainly consider picking him up.
The thing I guess I have a struggle with on McCarthy is it's like nothing he's doing is sustainable. He's not going to keep striking out 9 or 10 batters a start.
No, but
keep giving up 3 home runs per start.
I know, but he could give up. You know, he could strike out 7. He could strike out a batter per inning.
Yeah, I feel like this is an exaggerated version of what McCarthy could be this year. I did like this start for him, and actually, there may be a lot of starts at Dodger Stadium that I don't like for him because that's been a pretty good power park for lefties last few years. I do worry about that. No qualifying starting pitcher last year allowed a longer average fly ball distance than McCarthy did.
Mm. It's very so, and he's been homer prone, so.
Yeah.
All right, well, who would you rather have, McCarthy or Heston?
McCarthy.
I'll admit, I'd rather have Heston. Ah. It's the unknown. See what I get. I'm not really that confident in what I will get from McCarthy this year.
It's time for our Daily Dose. Let's do some FanDuel here for about 5 minutes, then we'll read some emails at fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Okay, Heath, we got a lot of games tonight. And what do you like? Who do you like to play tonight?
Well, everybody that's been listening knows that we always talk about the Vegas favorites. There has been, so far this year, no favorite more favored than Matt Harvey.
Wow, okay.
Minus 240 in Vegas this morning, which I think the best so far had been like minus 205. What that means, so just to give people a point of reference, is you would have to, if you were in Las Vegas, you would have to wager $240 to win $100 on a Matt Harvey start.
But you don't have to be in Vegas. You can bet. Oh, I see what you did.
Yeah. You do. I think Harvey, in my opinion, he's the highest priced pitcher of the day, but I think he's still underpriced. I think he should be over 10,000 on a normal start. Against the Phillies, he should maybe be close to 11. So he's at 9,900. He's going to be, I always tell people I play 5 or 6 lineups a day. He's going to be in 50 to 60% of them.
Who else do you like today?
Carlos Carrasco.
Okay.
There's a couple of cheap pitchers that I think are just basically tournament plays only. If you want to throw something up against the wall, go ahead, Al.
All right, this is going to sound crazy, but Kendall Graveman, you said you were going to talk about Peacock.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, you want to stack with ace hitters. But Graveman was sick for that first start, it turns out.
Interesting.
A healthier Graveman against Brad Peacock?
Yeah, I mean, the nice thing about, and he was one of the guys, the nice thing about Kendall Graveman is nobody else is going to play him. So if he does perform well, and it's kind of like, the immovable object against the stoppable force. That's
the movable object versus the stoppable force, or the other way around.
Yeah, it's basically the guy that does not strike anybody out against the offense that strikes out all the time. So,
what about some hitters, Heath? I want to get to some hitters.
I'm going back to a Blue Jays stack again. They're going up against Matt Andrees. Everybody at once say who? And Al can probably tell us all about him. But what you need to know about him is, the cheapest pitcher I've seen on FanDuel this year was Kendall Graveman at $5,000. Matt Andrees is $3,000 today.
What is Drew Rusinski today?
I'm sorry?
Drew Rusinski for the Angels.
He is $6,000.
Really?
So he's twice as good, according to FanDuel, as Matt Andrees.
Okay, so especially going up against our friend Nick Martinez, that's definitely not a good...
Yes.
Even though
yes.
I think Martinez is maybe not going to have a great start either. But
I do like the Blue Jays. I also, once again, like the Athletics, as we talked about, against Brad Peacock. One of these days, I'm going to say that Ike Davis is going to hit a home run, and he's actually going to do it. Maybe that'll be today. Who feels like rolling the dice with me?
If anybody wants to spend a lot of money, Adam Jones facing CeCe Sabathia in his career against Sabathia, 56 at-bats. He's batting .304. And last year, he slugged over 1,000 against lefties. And he's just hot right now. So I started my team with Harvey and Jones, and then I kind of plugged in the rest.
Another guy that absolutely destroyed lefties last year was actually the best Oriole against lefties on a fantasy points per at-bat basis was your boy Steve Pierce.
Yeah, he's playing like garbage, though.
Well, that means his price has gone down.
You know whose price has gone down a lot and is actually in my lineup is Evan Gattis. He's the 14th most expensive catcher.
I asked a question on Twitter last night, which would happen first? Evan Gattis gets a batting average or the Royals take a loss? And then about 30 minutes later, Gattis picked up his first hit of the year. So I guess for him, for 2015, he's hot now.
I just feel like if you're going to spend on the 14th most expensive player at a position, it might as well be a guy who we expected to be one of the elite players at the position, Evan Gattis. You know what I mean? Like, it just seems like I know he's not playing well, but he's facing Kendall Graveman, who could be good but could be bad. And that was a way for me to get Harvey and Jones in my lineup and save some money somewhere else.
Right. Manny Machado also.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I have him too.
Hit his first home run last night. He's still only 2,800 because one thing you'll learn about daily fantasy is whatever happened last night's not going to affect the pricing because the pricing's set before the game start. So sometimes you can take advantage of those things. Not that him hitting a home run necessarily makes him a good play, but he is at home where he's generally been better against CC Sabathia, who we don't think's very good.
One guy I'm avoiding is Jason Kipnis. 2014 versus lefties, he hit 208, slugged 244, 6 for 24 with one double against Jose Quintana, and he's the sixth most expensive second baseman.
Yeah, I can't see any way that I would play Kipnis tonight. In fact, I mean, just looking at it, I'm probably going to end up going, and it seems like I do more often than not punt the middle infield positions because you can just get starters that are hitting towards the top of the order so cheap there.
Mm-hmm. Or you can get a guy like Devin Travis if you want, right? If you're going Blue Jays.
Yes, Devin Travis. The only problem with Travis is he's a lot of times hitting ninth in the order, which means he may only get three at-bats.
All right, guys, let's read some emails here and start with Adam. He says, "Dear Hank, Babe, and Barry, had to give you guys a softball because you suck at this game. Sorry. Standard 5x5 Roto Mixed League. I drafted Joaquin Benoit, LaTroy Hawkins, and Henry Mejia as my closers. I now have Hawkins, Miguel Castro, Mujica, and Axford. So basically nobody. Name a few possible closers in waiting that might be available in deeper leagues."
Well, there may still be Ken Giles out there. I know he's not going to help you right away. And I'm trying to think in terms of somebody whose job may be in jeopardy, but he hasn't lost it yet. And I'm not sure that they're... Nobody's coming to mind at this point.
No, I like the first part here, convincing my team's going to be all right. Well, you're just going to lose one category.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that's a really tough position to be in.
I think Bobby Parnell, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you could bet on the Sports Illustrated jinx and pick up Wade Davis and just wait for Greg Holland to get hurt.
Anyone else? I don't know. You guys feel like Neftali Feliz has a grip on that job?
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
I guess if somebody's dropped, and I hate saying this, you guys know how excited I was about Soria, and I thought he'd win the job because of Nathan's performance. And it really irked me when Nathan got hurt before he lost the job due to performance, because I feel like when he comes back, Detroit's so stubborn with this situation, they're going to let Nathan have another opportunity. So I guess if somebody's dropped him, he's probably better than the guy, options you have.
Let's move on. Our next email is from... Sorry, it got cut off. The printer ran out of paper, so... It's from Rodney from anywhere you can find on Google in Manitoba. Heath, if you want to go ahead and Google that. Approve the move. 10-team categories league with daily moves.
Why can't we just go with Winnipeg?
Works for me. Add Xander Bogaerts and drop Manny Machado. I already have Carlos Santana at third base, so this would give me a guy in Bogaerts who's eligible at third and short. Drop Machado for Bogaerts.
I'm good with that in a 10-team.
Okay. Kirk.
Approved.
Dear Jackie Bradley and Jr., what are some strategies for daily head-to-head category leagues, 10 teams with 5 free agent ad drops per week? Do you aggressively ride fringy hot streakers, or do you stay loyal to slumping studs?
As far as hitters go, I try to stay loyal. If I can have 5 free agent ad drops, I'm going to use those on streaming pitchers.
And the fact that there are only 5 means that people aren't going to be streaming hot hitters as much, so I think you can get away with using the slumping guys more.
Listen, if you're really, really, and maybe you guys will disagree with this, but my opinion is if you're really good at streaming hot hitters, you should be in Las Vegas.
Well, okay, so yesterday, I streamed David Fries. I had him in my FanDuel lineup, and I put him in my Daily League lineup. I added him. Because
that makes sense.
Lefties.
He was in the article. Yeah.
Yeah. So you can get away with it. But in this 10-team, I'm in a 10-team league, which is a daily format, just like our emailer from Manitoba said. Somebody dropped Kyle Seager, and I put in a waiver claim for him. So you don't want to be the guy who drops Kyle Seager. Like, I wouldn't drop Kyle Seager for David Freese, even if I think Freese is going to have a better game or week.
Right.
So, yeah, you got to draw the line. Oh, that wasn't the Manitoba email. Sorry, that was Kirk. I got confused. A couple more here. A couple grade the trades. Jacob in Cincinnati. Give up Worth and Waka for John Lester in an NL-only eight-team categories league. Worth and Waka for Lester.
I'm not doing it because I'm really high on Waka, and I am a little nervous about Lester now.
I would have said, yeah. Oh, we're supposed to be grading these, Al.
Yeah.
So I would have given that an A week ago, and now I would still give it a B.
Oh, I thought you were going to say I would have given it an A week ago, and now I'll give it a 4.
4. Well, I'm not going to touch that with a 10-foot pole.
I'm going C-.
C-, okay. From Michael, grade the trade. Give up Hanley, Chu, and Henderson Alvarez for Justin Upton and Cole Hamels. Hanley Ramirez, Chu, and Alvarez for Upton and Hamels. Oh, yeah, I like that.
B+.
A+.
I'm going B+.
A-. Come on, give me an A- at least.
3.5.
That's it for today's show. Fellas, thank you very much. Much appreciated.
Anytime, Adam.
Go on FanDuel, sign up, use our offer code CBS, play Daily Fantasy, follow Heath and Al on Twitter. You can follow me on Twitter as well if you'd like. Whatever, I don't care. Not going to hurt my feelings. Al, Heath, goodbye.
Thank you, Adam.
Bye, Adam.
I'm Adam Azer. See you later.